Welcome to the Drive Phase Podcast, the best podcast for information on issues surrounding sports business in the Caribbean. On the Drive Phase, we have discussions with sport administrators, coaches, athletes, and various stakeholders in the sporting industry and examine their contribution to sports and entrepreneurship. Here's your host, Dalton Myers.
Thanks, Colleen. Before I get to these two guests who are two friends of mine, let me just use this opportunity to thank all of our listeners so far. The feedback has been great for the podcast, and I hope that you will continue listening. Of course, I have two amazing persons with me. I have Sheldon Bent and I have Julian Cressel. So today we're going to be doing things a bit different. It is the year in review on this podcast, and for this episode, it's going to be Julian, Sheldon, and Dalton. Julian, welcome back, sir.
Thank you very much. Good to be back.
And Sheldon.
Hey, thank you for having me, Dalton.
Yeah, well, interestingly, Sheldon was a student of mine in my sports, politics, and society class. Yeah. At the time of recording, I haven't marked his SAP for yet, so assuming that he's going to be a cool fellow on this podcast. But it's going to be a discussion. We're going to be talking about some amazing performances over the year. Start with Julian. What do you think would be your top three performances or sports moments for 2019?
Sports in general. So I start from, you know, a Jamaican perspective first. I think one of the top moments of the year for me was seeing the reggae girls participate in the World
take
Cup.
My one man.
So, you know, that is definitely number one. From a general sporting perspective, as much as it hurt me to my core, that Cricket World Cup final between England and New Zealand was, I think, one of the top moments of the year.
Yeah.
And then the performance of Shelley Ann Fraser Price at the World Championships. So I think those are the three that I will pick.
My top three is Daniel Sir Francis qualifying for
I'm gonna move my paper because the money kind of
her qualifying for the Olympics next year would have been great, because you know the Jamaica Olympic Association has a 10-in-20 plan, and I think that falls perfect within that. From a Jamaica standpoint, I might be a little biased. I think Kingston College Manning Cup team this year did really well. From a Jamaican perspective, right? So that's one of my top three. And of course, as Julian would have said, Shelley Ann Fraser Price return after pregnancy and earning 10.71.
You know, one of the reasons I brought Sheldon was that my assumption that Sheldon is very into sports. How does Kingston College winning one trophy for the entire year becomes a top moment, Sheldon?
For me, you asked me what's my top moment for me, and I had to give them that one.
But hold on, Kingston College and what though, you said? Can we back up?
Yeah.
Kingston College winning what?
Football, the one Champions Cup.
The Champions Cup.
Because you said Manning Cup.
Yeah, it's the Manning Cup team that represented them at Champions Cup.
I just want to be clear that you have not won the Manning Cup.
I'm sure if we ask Rashika, she could have said Chelsea winning a game or something. I get somebody. I don't even know. Right, so for me, so you guys talk about a few. Reggae Girls was one of them. Just watching them participate. Mm-hmm. The Shelley Ann Fraser Price, I don't know. I mean, there's so much about Shelley Ann to talk about.
Yeah.
And her performances right across were just superb. And I have to put in here Rochelle Clayton getting the bronze at the World Championships in the 400 meter hurdles for many different reasons. And I think, I mean, everybody knows I have a lot to do with Rochelle, but outside of that, she's just had an amazing year. All right, so let's go to the bad moments now for this year. We look at three moments that we like, disappointing moments, whether it is international or local. Sheldon, it's out to you.
Bad moments. First is Omar McLeod, of course. I was really looking forward to that gold medal. I was looking forward to an interesting race between him and Grant Holloway. Didn't get that. Another bad moment for me would have been Elaine Thompson.
That's just a disappointing moment. Not
disappointing.
Bad moment,
right? Disappointing. I think her and Omar together, we could have gotten 5 more medals out of them. Elaine could have medaled in the 1 and the 2. Omar could have run the 1 and then the 110 hurdles. And then he could have probably helped us in the relay and Elaine as well. So we could have probably gotten 5 more medals out of the 2 of them together. And then my other disappointing moment would be the Sunshine Girls finishing 5th at the World Netball Championships this year.
Yeah, I've been going so ever since.
Yeah.
So, This may sound like I'm just sticking to a few topics, but my kind of three disappointments would be the Cricket World Cup final between
and England.
I mean, it's been a very important part of, like, you know, my identity as a cricket fan to be able to say that England has never won a Cricket World Cup. Unfortunately, I can never say that again, thanks to a very foolish count back rule. Or you mentioned it a while ago, kind of there were disappointments from the World Championships. So as amazing as Shelley was, you know, there were many other, you know, disappointments. As amazing as Shelley and Rochelle were, because that to me was also a highlight.
Yeah.
And I said that seeing the reggae girls in the World Cup was one of my top moments. But seeing the way the JFF has treated the reggae girls program has to be one of the biggest letdowns of the year.
Mm. Since we're talking about the presidents, the associations, Christo, you've been around long enough. Where do we go with cricket? West Indies cricket. That's the first one I'm going to. And then Sheldon will chip in about JFF.
I hope you weren't like making a reference to my age a while ago when you said that I've been around long enough, you know. But,
no, well, that's true. You have been there,
right.
So.
I look on West Indies cricket right now, and, you know, it's not all doom and gloom. I don't watch cricket as much as I used to. Seniors have made me greatly disenchanted. But objectively, when I look on the West Indies right now, it's not all doom and gloom. We've seen their recent performances in limited overs cricket under the captaincy of Pollard. I think that, you know, for whatever criticisms of his, you know, batting, you know, the inconsistencies there, I think he provides a spark as captain, and I think it's a good move for him to be the limited overs captain. We've seen some consistent performances in Test cricket, things to build on the performances of, you know, Hope, for instance. Hetmyer seems to be a great talent in limited over cricket. Pooran seems to be a great talent. Yeah. So we have, I think, players that can make us, we're not going to be world beaters, we're not, but we have players that can at least perform consistently, and at this point
we're going
in time,
to be world beating, meaning right? Everybody beating us.
At this point, that's, I think, as a West Indian fan, as much as I could ask for, so that when this team takes the field, you know, it's not just a constant source of embarrassment. So there are some signs. You know, I think there is a continued shift in terms of emphasis to the shorter form of the game, in particular T20. I was seeing a lot of dynamic talents come out. I mentioned Pooran already. There's also Brandon King, who I think, you know, it has emerged as a promising talent. So I think there are some signs. The bowling is weak. I'm kind of concerned about the ability of CPL to consistently unearth talent. I don't think we've quite kind of built on the platform that CPL could provide in terms of unearthing talent, but I do see some good youngsters coming through. And of course, I think we are going to be reaping the benefits of having the professional league in the four-day competition. I will see it already with, you know, some of these, the four-day players coming through. As I say, I don't have any great hopes for the team, but I do think that, you know, for the next few years, we will be solid. And a bigger note, and a question for another time, is really where world cricket is going, because to be honest, we are going to be competing with the Sri Lankas and the Pakistans and the Afghanistans of the world. I mean, what you're seeing is the big three just going away and leaving everybody else.
Yeah.
And I do think that we can compete with those other teams that I mentioned, because they are in the same types of problems that we're, even right now South Africa is in serious trouble in terms of administration, in terms of economics, and we're really going to see this kind of two-tiered cricket league, and we will fit
quite well into tier two,
right? But as I said, those kind of bigger questions about where cricket is going, another time. But
boy, before I even touch that, here's my thing with cricket in the Caribbean. I've said over and over that I think it is on life support, never to return to its glory days. Sadly, the cricket itself is moving further along than where West Indies cricket is, and secondly, the money, the economics, the power dynamics is going to make it even worse. But the other part of it is, you know, people in the Caribbean no longer see cricket as as the go-to sport.
Yeah.
You know, they like the basketball, they love the football, the track and field is doing well. So you won't find a lot of the youngsters who are going to stick with it, you know. The quick fast bowlers, we've been talking about that ever since.
But I just stick up in quickly though? Here's what might change that. So when people say Sheldon Cottrell get $1 million, that will help to change that. Because I can tell you right now, in the Caribbean, there are at least 400 people say, you know, him can't read the ball better than me, you know.
Which is probably right? True.
And if him can get $1 million,
yeah,
right, that might help to change it.
True, but I mean, a lot of that is a bidding war that created that. And yes, it can happen again, but I'm not too sure it will. It's sometimes just a little bidding war that just causes a player to be priced or overpriced. Sheldon.
In terms of football, I'm not the biggest fan of Jamaican football, right?
So you're in a good group.
I mean, we've improved in our FIFA standings.
Before you start, though, may I ask, you have to say this on air, which team do you support?
Wow.
International football.
In international football, I'm a France man.
No, man. All right, let's take it back. In club.
All right.
Because we weren't talking about France that won in the World Cup. So let's talk about club. I know you're embarrassed to say it, but you probably should.
I'm not embarrassed, you know. But here's the thing.
No, but
growing up.
No, man. You don't have to give us the whole history, Sheldon.
All right. So which team? My team is Manchester United.
Yeah, man. No, you can continue now. Everybody, all the listeners now can understand why you're a little bit embarrassed to kind of say that. And for the listeners, just so you know, producer Rashika Grant is in here in a
Chelsea jersey.
In a Chelsea jersey, which is very disappointing to all of us. But continue, Sheldon.
So we improved in our FIFA standings. I'll give them that. The government has promised to invest more in our existing national facilities. I think that can help our footballers going forward. I think our Premier League needs a lot of strengthening, a lot of work. We still have issues with fights happening. We still have issues with players disrespecting our referees, that kind of thing. They've chopped the PFAJ, the Professional Football Association of Jamaica. So there is some changes that they're going to make to the Premier League. And I'm hoping that whatever changes that they do make, it really helps us going forward, because our football is really suffering. Because everywhere you go, you always see the little youth, they might kick ball over the place. But for some reason, it can never transcend into us improving or bettering as a footballing country.
Yeah, no, you're right. But you know the funny thing, as you're talking though, I mean, I've been following this football thing from way back. We saw a thing called Craveney Premier League before we had this whole Digicel and Red Stripe. Sure, yeah, Yaroshika would struggle to ever remember those kind of days. But we have been talking a lot about improving the football, football clubs, etc. And sometimes I just feel like we're just going backwards with it in a big way, you know. But some of the things that you just talk about are the tricky things, you know, the fighting at games, the smoking and the alcohol drinking, etc. at our national Premier Leagues. Can I just turn off a lot of fans, you know? Of course, a lot of people want to bring their family to go and watch some football. Even though, might I add, in English Premier League and European football, a lot of things happen in those stands that, trust me, you don't want to be in the middle of those places.
Oh, is the stands you're talking about? Can we say smoking and drinking? I thought you were talking about the Premier League players.
Me too.
Probably too.
Because I was going to say, obviously, you know, at the end of the day, in a sense, one, the bigger picture is a lack of professionalism.
Yeah.
You know, that first of all stems from the fact that there is no money really to pay players professionally. And then professionalism as all of the, you know, things that come along with that, attitudes, you know, discipline. Mm-hmm. And as you say, also that I think filters into the fan environment, you know, the kind of expectations. It's really still a kind of corner league vibe.
Yeah. Any of you guys follow the Caster Semenya case?
Yes.
Right. So
as closely as anybody.
So Sheldon, let me just say, because I don't necessarily know your position, and I don't know if we want to hear Julian's position on the air. But what I'll say though is that this was the year that the IWF, everybody started to put things in place to deal with some athletes who have been competing for many years. What is your position on it before we hear what Julian has to say? Even though we can do without hearing it, you know.
I mean, my position on it, I fully stand with Caster Semenya. I fully support her. I really think she should have been able to compete, because it's not like she's indomitable. She has been beaten before, so it's not like this advantage that they say that she's getting from her testosterone. It's not something that, you know, it's going to completely overthrow the playing field and nobody's ever going to be able to beat her ever again.
I think I should give you an A from now for the paper, even though I don't read your papers. From once you agree with me, we'll continue.
One of the things that I was compared to is the whole Michael Phelps story. We heard about some of his biological advantages and how he was lauded for it, you know, having double joints in like his ankles, those kind of things that made him the swimmer he is. He was never unstoppable, but he was beaten. He's been beaten a lot of times. So if we are able to laud Michael Phelps, and this brings gender into the sphere, if we're able to laud Michael Phelps for his biological advantages, where are we punishing Caster Semenya for what she is born as?
And it's a very simple answer to that question, that we don't have a category in sport for big feet and small feet. We have a category for male and female. And the question then is the question really then you're saying is, should we have a gender category? Right? Because if you have a gender category, then you're going to have to define it, right? We can make the case, and I've had a, you know, conversation with somebody who looks on kind of like the, you know, the ethics of sport. One could make the case of doing away with gender categories and finding other ways to categorize competitors, right? Because when you started to speak about it, the first thing that I said to myself is, I can't beat any single woman runner, right? So if you're going to use can be beaten as a criterion, then I can't beat any woman in the Olympics, but should I be allowed to compete in women's sports? Absolutely not, right? So if you're going to have gender as a category, then you're going to have to find a way to define it, right? And I don't have the time today to take you through the whole history of how the IOC and the IAAF have attempted to define gender.
But I will say
uh-huh. this, that what they have right now is by far and away the best thing that they have ever come up with. Right. At the end of the day, one of the things that we're going to realize is that there is no solution in which everybody is going to be happy, because the problem arises from the fact that gender isn't a neat binary.
Yeah.
And you have people that don't fit in. So the question then is, do we privilege the individual, in this case, Semenya, and say, you don't neatly fit in, we are going to privilege your rights above everybody else? Or do you say, well, we're going to privilege the rights of the group at the expense of this individual? And I don't necessarily think there's a right or wrong approach when it comes to that. Some people feel that, no, the individual has to suffer for the greater good. Some people feel that, no, we shouldn't. You know, when you look on Semenya, you feel sorry for her, right? I genuinely feel incredibly sorry for her, because to be born that way in a world that organizes everything in this kind of gender binary is a massive disadvantage. It affects her negatively in so many ways. And, you know, my heart goes out to her. But if I am organizing sport and I'm going to maintain gender categories, I have to define it.
Yeah,
and if we're going to define it, we then can't just, you know, how do we allow
her? But Julian Cressa, the problem is that in the solution that the IAAF has come up with, they are not defining gender.
They're not.
They are defining her participation in particular events.
Yeah, because it's not like they're
based on testosterone levels. So right. To be a female in the IAAF races, you must be X, and to be males, you need to be X.
So since it's a podcast and I can get away with saying certain things, I'll say this.
Come to you.
Hypothetically, then.
Yeah.
What the IAAF is trying to do,
World Athletics
is trying to do, is to come up with fair male female categories. Legally,
right?
They can't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what they're trying to do is to create what is a workaround. And I will agree with you that, for instance, the requirement of the courts to have evidence that testosterone gives certain advantages has kind of backed them into a corner in which the solution that they've come up with has these areas that leave you scratching your head. Why should she be disallowed from running 800 meters, but she can go, you know, throw a hammer or whatever? All right, so I agree with that. But what I'm saying is, and why I say I can say this is, I think we all know that what they're trying to do is to protect the integrity of women or female as a category. That is really what they're trying to do.
Totally agree with you.
And
yeah.
if they're going to protect the integrity of women / female as a category, that's what I say, if, you know, because we can just do away with male, female. But if we are going to protect the integrity of women as a category, then there has to be criteria that are going to define that category. And the criteria that they've come up with so far isn't the best. You see, the problem where a lot of people come from, most of it, is that so many people that I've seen in social media assume that Caster Semenya is born XX and just has high testosterone. Now, none of us at this table here have any other paperwork.
Yeah, so
I'm not going to get myself in trouble, nor you in trouble, because I'll run away and leave you to work. What I will say is this.
Based on the ones that have been leaked.
All I will say is this. I mean, you need to say that. All I'll say is this. The regulation only applies to XY individuals.
Mm-hmm.
So if somebody's affected,
XY with particular events,
yeah. Right? So I just wanted to make that, because a lot of people think,
no man, I know
this is an XX individual with high testosterone, and that's not the case. It's an XY individual with a difference of sexual development.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wanted to make
that point. Right, and I'm with you, Cressa, but up to the point that I still say, even with XY, we're still, and obviously they want to go the full gamut from probably 100 meters until whichever 20 odd events that we have. That's really the aim, but they can't right now.
Right,
but until then I still say, well, it's targeted, and it's targeted because of the amount of, because your own research, not yours, but their own research that they did, events that they either put in or don't put in. Those are my challenges with it. And what I can appreciate is that the World Athletics, they have a challenge because they are trying to protect that category called women's sport or female sport. They're trying to protect it because there's been a lot of clamoring for some protection. And level of probably not even equality, but just some protection. I don't know if what they have found is the best one at this moment. It's probably the best they could come up with, but probably not the best available option that there is.
And again, you're looking for, it sounds sometimes that you're looking for perfect.
No.
And the problem is that, I tell you already, somebody going to get shafted.
Yeah.
It's just who. It's just who.
All right, so. You wanted to say something else on that one, Sheldon?
Well, I mean, I was going with what you said. The solution seems targeted. Like, why is the solution directly aimed at the events that she participates in?
Mm-hmm.
What? So are you trying to tell me that the testosterone that she has only helps her in the 4 and the 8? So if she decides to run the 1 and the 2, that levels, that testosterone no longer helps her in the race. If she decides to throw a hammer, it no longer helps her out. That's just what the solution looks like. It looks like, all right, Caster Semenya, you're an anomaly and we're trying to get you out and we're protecting women. So we're just going to find a way to exclude you and have the rest of the women compete. Now, if the solution had, you know, say, all right, here's this thing, testosterone straight across the board, and if they also provided something that said men with elevated estrogen levels are stopped from certain events or will have to compete in a different category, then that would be fine, because that would have been a more comprehensive solution. But it just looks like Caster Semenya stands out and we're removing her from the picture so that we can protect the rest of the women who compete in the events.
All right, boss. All right, so we're going to switch it up a bit, and we're going Russia. So our listeners must have heard by now that Russia has been banned, certainly from major games, international games. Now, there's a funny thing with that, because they had to then ask WADA, which is a World Anti-Doping Agency, for clarification on whether or not this ban then went to athletes who are competing in stuff like the European championships, etc. And they said no. It's just major events. But IWF actually take a different stance. IWF is simple. Once you're from Russia, unless we have cleared you, you cannot compete in any event whatsoever. I start with Sheldon. What's your take on this Russia doping scandal, if you want to take that one?
Well, the good thing is we talked about this in class. So
good. I know, a great lecture.
Yeah, I know a couple of things.
Chris, have you heard that? Did you hear that?
I heard you say it.
No.
Yeah, he is a great lecturer. He is. You have to give him that.
I don't know. He has Marty paper yet. So. I will bear that in mind as I weigh up the credibility of that statement.
Yeah, so
I wish I had Rashika to just push some support that she has heard that I am a great lecturer also.
And she's laughing.
Yeah, all right, so that's enough. People can see what happened in the studio.
All right, so the whole Russia thing, it was just crazy when I heard about it, that you can actually have a state sponsoring athletes for doping. I mean, and also when I found out that the IAAF, who's now World Athletics, were part of the collusion, that just even made it even more out of the ordinary. I'm happy that they're banned, but I'm also happy that they've proposed a solution where we get authorized neutral athletes, where if you can prove that you haven't participated in doping, then you know you get to compete, and that's something that I completely applaud. But yes, continue to ban them until RUSADA can prove that, listen, we've done away with doping and we're testing for doping instead of doping the athletes.
Krista, is it really not just politics though? Like, politicking right across the... I hear Sheldon and he sounds very intelligent. Trust me, I feel proud. But the thing that I wonder though, isn't there a lot of politicking though, man?
Yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of politics. You know, I was struck as I was listening a while ago by what we just said a while ago with Simone and this idea of targeting. Mm-hmm. Because it does seem as if, you know, Russia has been targeted. I don't know the reasons for that. As you said, I'm sure there's a lot of politics going on, but it does seem like they're targeted. Now, of course, for me to be consistent, I'll say, even if it is a matter of them being targeted, if it is there's sufficient evidence right. to show that mm-hmm. there's this going on, get rid of them.
Get rid of them, yeah.
Of course, we all, I know as Jamaicans especially, who have a vested interest in the integrity of track and field, I know the reaction of a lot of Jamaicans, I think I speak for them, is we'd love to see them get everybody else too.
right?
We'd love to see them get everybody else too. And it does seem a bit like, you know, doping on who for frighten, right? In them taking on and having the might to go after Russia. Mm-hmm. But as I say, you know, in some sense, it is a special case. They deserve the punishment based on the evidence that has been provided. So I will never defend them. But there does clearly seem to be certain politics behind the scenes, certain agendas behind the scene. And I would just love to see them, you know, doing more to eradicate other offenders from the sport.
I don't know which one of you are going brave enough to talk about this, but do you think in Jamaica, when it comes on to adverse analytical findings, if we hear about any other country or person outside of Jamaica, we're quite comfortable in saying, yes, my feet say something that go on this a long time. But if we hear about any of our athletes, especially if they are young, and under 20, they're juniors, we think, no, they could not have been doping. It's really a mistake, and Jatko is after them.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very typical human reaction, I think, and very natural. I mean, I'm the exception, and I don't speak on behalf of Jamaicans when I say I think we are fully capable of being just as guilty as anybody else. Mm. Even if we are, but we are certainly capable. But I agree with you in the sense that, you know, I think that we are very quick to give our athletes a blight. We believe that it is the culture of Jamaican track and field, and it is a culture established over decades, a culture of excellence and hard work. And we believe that that particular culture almost, you know, insulates us from drug use, and I think that that's crazy.
Yeah, for most Jamaicans believe once you're able to beat a Jamaican on the track, clearly in a natural, you're a fear dope. So that's really what Jamaicans believe, right? And if you watch a race and a Jamaican do win, nobody now watch the TV, really. So we really have a culture where we think that our athletes cannot dope. We're all so great. We eat the yam and the dashin and the banana, and because of that, you know, we don't dope. We're just natural. I mean, it is true. A lot of our athletes are natural, and we've competed without drugs for the most part. But like I said, it's a Jamaican culture. Once you beat a Jamaican, clearly you're dope. Something wrong.
Yeah, and it's something I've had these discussions with persons many times who say there's no way Jamaicans would never dope. And I'm like, yeah, but you know, we've had a few cases.
We've had many more cases. Than many people are willing to admit.
And some of the cases we'll never talk about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a few years ago, we had a few who returned adverse analytical findings. And we don't talk about it, but we're killing poor Gatlin. But to be fair, though, and you know, I shouldn't even use Gatlin because Gatlin has has been found twice to be doping. Good old Justin Gatlin. All right, guys, so we're going to move right along, and I'm going to ask you about a few other things. I don't know if you've been following this whole Diamond League or anything that World Athletics has been doing, and we want to jump in on that one. Sheldon, I give you some time to think about it, and since Chris has said yes, I'll go to him first.
Yeah, I mean, it's just indicative of the way sports has been moving in the last 20, 30 years. Ever since we've had this very wholesale, complete commercialization and commodification of sport, you know, everything answers to money. Yeah. And what is happening with the Diamond League, I assume you're referring to the new proposed schedule where some events will be, cut out. It is responding to the imperatives of television. And as we know, it is television that pays the piper. So television calls the tune. And it's unfortunate because, you know, we've seen it in so many areas of sport. Are being left behind because they are not as financially profitable as other areas. And I don't know, I mean, I think we live in an age in which money has become our god. And I don't know who is willing to, you know, which administrators are willing to sit down and at some point just decide that sometimes for the benefit of sport, that, you know, we don't always have to take the most financially profitable decision.
Internationally, that done, Crystal. Internationally, well, it is simple about the money.
Right, but the problem, of course, then becomes a case of killing the goose that lays the golden egg. Because if you look on, for instance, a very similar kind of discussion taking place around the 100 with cricket in England, you know, here's this new competition, new format of, I don't even want to call it cricket, I don't know what it is, right? It's going to generate so much, but the counties, many of the counties are going to suffer, and that is the counties are, in a sense, the lifeblood. So when you have this 100 now, you know, and it generates money, you know, in 10 years, are, you know, have you strangled the very structure that has produced the cricketers who, you said, the people who will start 100 now are already superstars. Mm-hmm. Are we strangling the structure that is going to produce the next generation of superstars to get money? No. I don't know, but it's a conversation that needs to be had. And in this case here, you know, what you're doing is you're saying to fans, to potential athletes, that track and field is only for these people. Run fast, that's it. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, there's track and field is not for you. And the question is, does that benefit the good of the sport generally over the medium to long term? We'll see.
I mean, yeah, I agree with Julian. We've seen where the media and how commercialized sport has become has really affected how much we consume, because it's all about the 100, and it's all about the quick running events, and if you're not participating in one of those events, then you don't really get that much attention. So, but I was really surprised when I heard that they were removing some of the events from the Diamond League, because I really thought that, you know, the 200 would have stayed. I mean, who would have thought that they'd gotten rid of the 200? But the commercialization of sport has really affected how we consume sport. So again, if you're not run fast, if you're not run 10 seconds and below, then, you know, there's the money has gotten so much. And I am foreseeing a period where the media is going to start telling organizers when to have their events. And that's the kind of foresight I have, where the media is going to say, okay, run the marathon at this time, run the 200 at this time, because this is the time where viewers, and we're not concerned on whether or not, because if we can have world championships in a country as hot as Qatar, right?
And football,
we are looking out for the best interest of the athletes, because if the media can say, okay, run the marathon at this time, because, you know, we know that most viewers are going to be able to watch it at this time. But what if that is not the best time for the marathon runners? Suppose that is the hottest time of, or the coldest time of the day. You want to get the marathon runners at the most optimum time of the day, that it does not negatively affect their performance. But we're now seeing where the media and where money is saying, all right, are we on the sport? And we say so, and the sport has to compromise.
Yeah, I think there are a few things for me on it. The way that the World Athletics has gone about it has kind of left a bitter taste in many of the athletes' mouth. They have now created an athletes' federation. I can't remember the correct name, but I wanted to go on that point also, that it's funny that very few athlete bodies have come out against the move of World Athletics, and even worse, very few athletes who have not been affected by this have come out in support of their fellow athletes. And it's a challenge I've had with track and field over the years. So now, you know, a lot of athletes are upset, their coaches, their agents, but you're not getting that general unity from the track and field body.
Well, we live in an age of capitalism and individualism. Yeah. Everybody's securing their own bag.
Yeah, and even retired athletes, and this is no shade or overshadowing, but even retired athletes, nobody's coming out to really say that, you know, they don't believe that this is right.
Yeah.
Or that World Athletics should rethink this, etc., etc. You know, you're not getting a lot of that, except the athletes who this will affect. You know, so the sprinters, the jumpers, meaning the triple jumpers, etc. You know, you're not getting that. And that, for me, is a challenge. You know, it's left to see what will happen at the end of the year with this new format that the World Athletics is putting in place. I think it will disadvantage quite a number of athletes.
Yeah.
But marketing agencies now run sports. You know, advocacy groups that are in marketing, they're the ones who are making the money. They're the ones who are, you know, sometimes caught up in a lot of the corruption in sports, and that's where, you know, a lot of the challenges are. Yeah, I don't know what will change, I don't know how it will fix, but certainly I see commercialization of sport as something that will continue for a long while, and more it will be about the money than it is about the play.
Yeah.
That's what cricket has gone to, Chris.
I mean, I'm
that one is even worse. Yeah, not worse, but that one is big.
Yeah,
football,
it's really
cricket.
Evident.
And I'm just going
with
to
TPL, see. Yeah.
And as I said, time will tell. You know, on the one hand, it might inspire more people because there's more money in the game.
Mm-hmm.
It might create a new demographic in terms of the audience who loves, you know, whether it is the T20 or the 100, or it is somebody who prefers this new kind of condensed, exciting track and field package on TV. But it may also, you know, disenfranchise participants as well as turn off a number of spectators. So time will really tell whether in the long run it's good for the overall health of the sport or not.
All right, I'm going to bring it back home and ask you guys your opinion on a few things. I'm going to talk about sports administration in Jamaica. Which associations do you think would be, for you, the best performing sport association in Jamaica? And which do you think is the worst?
Wow.
That's the sound of me leaving the studio.
Which is it? You know, so that I don't get in any trouble, I cannot comment on this because of my professional work. I can't be saying anybody is the worst or the best for fear of losing my job. I don't know if that worked, but there's a silence in the... Rashika, do you have any opinion on this? What do you think about it? No, you can talk, you know, the listeners will hear you. She don't want to say anything.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm pausing because when you have so much...
Good.
Incompetent.
Exactly. Because I was thinking,
it's hard, to weigh, you know, it's like, how do I weigh this up? You know, it's like, it's like in a race to the finish line of worse, a number of administrations are like, you know, neck and neck thundering down, you know, the track.
Well, to help you guys out, we have had a few issues. Netball is struggling. They have been really struggling and going south. Football, but they have football re-elected the good Ricketts. I'm assuming that they have seen something fantastic in him. Billy Heaven has been returned as president of cricket. And table tennis have been struggling, but they... The president remained, even though there's some constitutional issues.
Funny enough, I will say that in terms of cricket,
yeah,
I can't really say that there's anything I can like pinpoint as like necessarily a major negative this year.
Fair enough.
And I'll even give credit to Billy for, you know, the administration, Billy's administration, for trying to implement this new franchise cricket. Yeah. You know, whether it is going to work, but at least, you know, we see some type of move there. You know, cricket has gotten a big knock a long time in the West Indies. So I am not necessarily lumping the Cricket Association in with that, but in terms of certainly what we see with football, yes, Ricketts has been re-elected. The delegates who have re-elected him have their reasons, whatever those may be.
Unanimously.
Right.
Unopposed. Unopposed.
Whatever their reasons are, Ricketts, I can only say as somebody who, you know, watches sport, who supports our national teams, everything surrounding the Reggae Girls seemed like a fiasco and a disaster, and it seemed incredibly poor. Well, again, I'm Crystal, trying to protect
you. Protect me, that's true. Right. I was just asking a question, but do you know?
Very poorly managed.
Do you know? Do you each know that the Reggae Girls have qualifiers coming up from January 28th to, I think, February 9th?
Yeah.
But they still don't have a head coach.
They don't.
Yeah. And right now, you know, when you think about, you see, a lot of people, when they look on West Indies cricket decline, will point out that when we were dominant, we missed so many opportunities to market and to monetize and to set up West Indies cricket to be dominant for another 20 years. And we allow that moment to pass. When these Reggae Girls qualified for the World Cup, the amount of goodwill that was there for us is a moment that we could have capitalized on. And instead of capitalizing on this immense goodwill, we squandered it.
Mm. Sheldon.
Sporting administration, the biggest disappointment for me, again, would have been Netball Jamaica. When they're playing in a court series coming up in January, I think.
In England.
And they had their head coach a couple weeks ago. Like, that's when they appointed their head coach. I went to one of their training sessions, I think last week, Friday, just to sit and watch. And I could not believe that this was a national team. I thought it just looks like it's like a group of 12 girls from round the road get it together and say them I got throw ball.
No, look how Sheldon I'm a loser.
No, that's my opinion.
No, that's fine.
So that's really what it looked like. And then to hear the fiasco that happened when they tossed majority of the squad. And then, in my opinion, I when the squad started declining, I thought they should have changed the head. She's been there for a very long time. I've been wanting her to be changed for a very long time. But, you know, she's still there. She's supposed to step down. Been waiting for her to step down. But Netball Jamaica really got the hit for me, from flopping at the World Championships to their coming home and everything just going straight down south. They would be the worst performing for me this year.
You know, I don't think I can get in trouble for this, but I think the way we have handled the Sunshine Girls is one, but the Reggae Girls, I think there is just so much disappointment there for me, you know, because we had one of those glorious opportunities to generate income.
Attention,
everything. Market the girls, market the entire thing. And I think we just missed it, you know. And that for me is probably the biggest disappointment for the entire year. You know, no matter what happens in all of the other sporting administration or sporting disciplines. That for me.
I'm sorry, just add a punctuation point. Especially in a moment, a kind of the politics of sports moment in which everybody is anxious, ready, eager to promote equality in sport and to put resources into the promote. If we came and said, here are these Reggae Girls, you know, we want to sell it, I'm sure, you know, and it, as I said, it's a missed opportunity.
May I ask you guys though, is it that, because for me this year again was a year for women in sport in Jamaica, is it that our women are just outperforming our males by far? And, you know, it's just that we need to accept that until the males start to come around in whatever discipline.
Yeah, I think the women are outperforming the men. We've seen it this year. One of the major things that we've seen is the girls, their transition from high school into professional sprinting is now much better than it was. The guys, not so much. I think the media has a lot to do with it. Once there is a well-performing athlete that is female, the media tends to grab onto it. We have Alia, who was 2019, she was the CSE female athlete of the year. We had Shelley, who was doing great things, and we have other female athletes representing us in other sporting disciplines. We had Danusia Francis. So we saw where the women stepped up in 2019, and they really grabbed the attention of the media, and it does look like the women are outperforming the men.
Yeah, I mean, on the face of it, this year the women have outperformed the men. I can't help but when you ask a question like this, ask myself, are you trying to, you know, investigate whether this suggests deeper structural things? That's how my mind works. And I'm not sure it does. I will say yes, this year our best performances have come from women. Does it mean that overall, kind of like the health of women's sport in Jamaica is better than men's sport?
No.
I'm not sure that it does. But certainly the highlights of this year have largely come from our women.
Mm. All right, so let's talk about 2020. What are our expectations for next year? What do you think we'll be doing really well next year in terms of sports in Jamaica or the Caribbean or wherever?
Let me tell you something. You see, if Liverpool win the Premier League, I don't business about nothing else. I don't business about anything else. My only focus.
My only focus
for 2020.
Anybody could understand your
is
your,
the Premier League.
Your feeling at this moment.
I don't business about anything else other than the Premier League. Thank you very much. It was good to be here.
Listen, Julian Chris has totally forgot that we even have Olympics next year.
Exactly.
We do? See, no, I never remember for real. Yo, not even Champions League, hear me? Not even Champions League.
Oh, God, you
nothing.
Know?
Premier League is my only. Is it 2020? Talk about sharp vision? That is where my vision is focused. That's the only thing that I
think. Because I'm not a biased person, I think the world would be happy for a Liverpool win in the Premier League.
This is more the world than me, man.
I think the world is looking forward to it and would appreciate a Liverpool win.
I think he's calling himself the world.
I know that there are people who will not be happy for us. Like, you know, that fella sitting across from me right here.
And some other people were in the room.
But it's
fine.
But I know that's the only expectation I hope I have for 2020. Like, I'll just never watch sport again after.
My expectation for 2020, squared on the Olympics in track and field. I'm hoping for a redemption in medals. Hopefully we can step up and medal. Want Shelley to come and do another great performance. Hopefully we can have Elaine recover, have Omar recover. I really want to see a showdown between Juan Miguel Echavarria and Tajay Gale in that long jump in the Olympics. I was expecting Echavarria to dominate, but Tajay surprised us, and thank her for that gold medal. So I'm really focused squarely on the Olympics, but
in other sports,
I hope the reggae girls want. I know they're a great team, and I know once the reggae girls step out on the pitch, it's a different story. They're going to perform, and I hope that we are able to. They will get more attention, and we'll be able to monetize the effort of the reggae girls. I think we can look into supporting and protecting the reggae girls, because right now they're doing much better than the guys, and I think we're at the place where women and girls are becoming more evident in sports. So I think the reggae girls will perform good next year in my prediction, and I think we should start supporting and protecting the reggae girls even more.
All right, cool. So listen, what Cressa has said is very important. I've been thinking about this I've been dreaming of a Liverpool victory. I've played in my mind over and over what I will do, how I will celebrate. But you know, sport is funny, so I kind of temper a lot of that. But yeah,
the ball is round.
It is. But each day,
day, and must never realize that weekend.
Yeah. David De Gea. Yeah, no, but I'm looking forward to, you know, a good performance from Liverpool. And listen, people will listen to this podcast for many years to come. But I tell you this, if Liverpool wins, I think people will have to mute me from social media, block me from social media.
They have to block me in a real life.
Car, everything. Block my phone number, stop listening to the podcast. Because I would spend the rest of the year talking about Liverpool on this podcast. I know I will have a producer, but that's fine. I can't bring back Chris, I will just talk. But the other thing is, though, that in terms of for next year, 2020, that I'm looking forward to, I think I'm just looking to see how Shelley just keep doing what she does well. I think Shelley is revolving. She every year, she finds a different way to just evolve. Danusha Francis, I think making it to the Olympics is fantastic, and I think I kind of just want to see how she will make that transition, what she will do on the international stage. I'm looking forward to seeing a lot of the youngsters making that transition in terms of track and field. Whether it's the Christopher Taylor, whether it's the Anthony Carpenters, the Kevona, yeah, you know, all of those young athletes, I want to see them making that transition to the senior level. In cricket, it's another opportunity to see whether or not these young guns, you know, can be consistent when the international teams figure them out. So yeah, the Purans, Hetmyers, the Kings, King, you know, to what extent they will be able to manage, you know, balls that are moving all over the place. And when people spend, you know, 12 hours just watching and figuring out what the weaknesses are in their techniques, how well can they improve on that and continue doing well and getting their averages up? And then the other thing in cricket is whether or not we can find some real good bowlers, quick, wicket-taking bowlers, not necessarily even just quicks, but wicket-taking bowlers who can just stem the flow of runs and can take wickets. You know, that's just what I'm looking. Yeah, I want to see some of that, and stop wondering when the next wicket will come.
Yeah, yeah, that's definitely.
And praying for people to play on the wicket and stuff like that. You know, those days are done. You have to be and bowl on people.
Yeah.
Some of those are what I'm looking forward to. I mean, it's Olympic year. I don't know if the reggae girls can really qualify for the Olympics. It was always going to be difficult. And I think now it is even worse.
They were
behind the eight ball coming out of the World Cup. We don't have the talent like everybody else who are trying to make it, certainly in the region. And so we need to work a little bit harder. And we haven't been really putting in that work. If we make it, it will be a miracle. You know? And that's my thing when it comes down to the Women's World Cup. But those are some of the things I'm looking forward to. I think the NBA season is going to be a good one going into the playoffs.
It's been a disappointing NBA season for me.
Are you a Warriors fan?
Steph Curry out with that injury, you know, really knocked me over.
Warriors, new relegation, you know, battle. Is that a tough year for you?
Yeah, it has been a tough year, but I'm bringing the Trailblazers, you know, they're looking really good.
You see, you understand right away, I didn't switch.
I'm waiting for Steph Curry's return, patiently waiting. I'm enjoying the gameplay of the Portland Trailblazers. Definitely.
I cannot understand, and probably I'm getting old. You have a team. How do you put your team on pause? Listen,
we've been waiting nearly 3 decades for Liverpool win. My man, Bridging over there, so.
Shala, yeah.
Injured.
One month.
You know, this month. We are 30 years away from our time. And after 1 month, my one switched team. You know?
Wow.
Remember, the Warriors have won two titles, so we're good.
Apparently, you're not good.
We're good. I mean, I still support the Warriors. I watch every single game.
But you put them on pause until...
But I'm still vexed because, you know, Steph Curry not there.
But you could never be a Chicago Bulls fan. Knicks fan.
No. Sacramento Kings,
a Liverpool fan. You could not be a Sheffield Wednesday fan. You could be any of these fans who have been struggling all these centuries. It's what, Sheldon? If that's your thing. All right, what else should we expect for next year? Anything you think will change? Anything you're... I mean, Chris, I talk about Liverpool already and done, but anything else we think that this will be the year for? What?
Well, I'll just jump in to say, I think that in many ways, 2020 is going to, if not necessarily define, kind of set the parameters for where sport is going to move next. You know, we have a boltless Olympics, you know. What is that going to look like? We've already talked about, you know, the restructuring of the Diamond League. What is cricket going to look like with, you know, the 100 coming out, the emphasis on T20? Are we really just going to move towards a big three in cricket? You know, so in a lot of sports, I think we're going to like really in the next year or two begin a transition into a new phase. I mean, even if thinking about football, you know, Messi and Ronaldo are still phenomenal, but I don't think they have many more years left on the top, you know, at the very top, at this peak level of performance. So I really think that beginning this year, we are going to see a kind of ushering out of a particular era of superstars. And I'm waiting to see what this kind of like new sporting era is going to look like.
Yeah, I think for me also, you know, the youngsters are going to be making that transition is what I'm looking forward to right across. I think a lot of teams will be taking a nosedive, you know, as we kind of just see top teams move up, move down, etc. I think the next 10 years, though, if I want to move that far, is going to be about technology in sports. I think it's really going to be improving technology, trying to make the fan experience way better through technology, almost making you feel like you're at the game, even if you're not at the game, you know, whether it's basketball, whether it's football, track and field, etc. My challenge with track and field is that sometimes I'm struggling to understand where they're trying to go. With the sport, what, you know, how will the changes improve the sport as we go forward? Mm-hmm. So those are some of the things I'm looking forward to. You know, just seeing how some of these kids make that transition.
Yeah, for me, 2020 is going to be a rebuilding year, as Chris would have mentioned. But less Olympic Games, that's going to be interesting to see. So I think it's a rebuilding time it's the beginning of the decade, and it's right time for us to start rebuilding, rebuilding in terms of track and field, rebuilding in terms of netball, rebuilding in terms of football. So we are heading into an era of just redevelopment of our sports, and I hope hopefully this time around we can do proper development of the sport so that we can survive on the top for a longer time period.
Sorry, I just wanted to add, this is kind of off base, but I'm also very interested in watching the continued renaissance of Tiger Woods.
Yeah, you know, I was going to ask you about that, you know, especially when we're talking about the Shelly and Fraser Prize, etc. Tiger Woods and how he has evolved, Cressa.
Yeah, I mean, when he won the Masters this year, it was amazing. But in the majors that followed. He wasn't great. Yeah. And there's a kind of like, this is amazing. But then is it just a kind of last hurrah of, you know, a great veteran on his way out? But then towards the end of the year, he's been absolutely brilliant and consistent. And I'm excited. I'm very anxious to see. So that's just one other thing I'll throw into the mix.
Yes. And I want to also see what Serena Williams can do and next year as she hunts some more.
Really love to see her get that the major record for herself.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right, well, guys, thank you very much for being here. That was Sheldon Bent. Sheldon is a student at the University of the West Indies, and Julian Crest actually taught there for quite a while, history and all of those stuff. But he's a fantastic sports enthusiast, and you can follow him on social media. On Twitter, it's at Julian Crest, and Sheldon on Twitter. And for Sheldon on Twitter?
For me on Twitter, it's... underscore Sheldisimo underscore. So that's SHELDISIMO.
No, that's a whole heap. Well, listen, it's been a fantastic year, and I hope that next year will even be greater, certainly for sport and on this podcast. We started this year in April, and we have been going really well. And you know, you can just follow us on all of the social media platforms. But as usual, I have to say thanks to all of our listeners who have tuned in to the Drive Phase podcast. And certainly, I have to just thank everyone. Say it over and over. This has been a journey. And on behalf of my producer, Rashika Grant, and thank her also, thanks to Andre Sawyers, Marsha Boyce, have done a great job. Heather Bernard, Tracy and Johnson Myers, all the persons who have been there behind the Drive Phase in making this possible. So thanks to them. Remember, you can also check out our website. It is thedrivephase.com, and make sure to subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts. That is important because we always want to get our ratings on Apple Podcasts. And if you use Stitcher, also there, and also Google Podcasts. And this ensures that you never miss an episode. We always appreciate a rating. And also, tell your friend about the show so they too can spread the word. Feel free to send feedback and comments, questions to thedrivephase@gmail.com, or look us up on Twitter and Facebook. Our username is thedrivephase. We use the hashtag TDP. Season's greetings to everyone. Until next time.